Hello, grandkids, and welcome to Stunt Granny Audio 593. This is Kevin DeFrango. On the other end is Chris Calamita. What is up?
Not a heck of a lot, Kevin. How about yourself?
Another day, another podcast. I guess it'll be kind of fun to split the world into WWE and AEW. Does give us a little more time to talk about everything in general, which is kind of nice. So, I will say that I do like that part. And, since you, got the pay-per-view this past weekend, you decided to purchase All Out. I was not ready to, purchase that. I did not even think about it, honestly, on Saturday evening.
It must be nice to actually have a life.
I'm not going to say that I have a life because that's still kind of weird considering everything going on. I think that we were just watching something else, you know, like it was something that the wife and I, wanted to watch rather than just me, which the wrestling mostly is. Like I said, I didn't think about it, but I definitely saw some craziness on my timeline that popped up quite quickly to my attention. That one, Matthew Hardy may have taken a questionable, at best, bump that caused a stoppage in a match, but then they restarted the match. And, meanwhile, we get Rebby Hardy, screaming up a storm, or tweeting up a storm, I guess, and calling her own husband an idiot. And I've got to say, like, as someone who has had a mild concussion, you are not really in control of your faculties at that point. And that choice needs to be taken away from you.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. It was a bizarre scene. I've never seen anything quite like it. When he hit, it was obvious he hit the back of his head. From the moment you saw it, it was immediate. That something had to have gone wrong there, and then he's stumbling about. It looks like they're about to call it, but then he gets like this, like he's totally in his broken character, just this wild-eyed look in his eyes, and for some reason, they decide to go with the match because he's obviously out of it, but running on some sort of adrenaline, or he actually at this point, you know, believes he's broken Matt. And the match continues, and he does more physical exertion than anyone with a concussion probably should. Climbs a piece of scaffolding, and then the match ends with Sammy Guevara taking a total stunt bump into an obviously prepared and padded area, which is huge part of the problem of what they did, you know, is number one, that bump wasn't even going to be the finish of the damn match. And number two, there was so little margin of error. It was just a 6x2x4 table.
Oh, yeah. Probably about two.
with no other kind of padding, it just, you know, it was such a low margin of error. Yeah.
You probably have about 30 inches. I think it's most of those tables are probably about 30 inches.
Yeah.
Wide.
Yes.
By about 6 foot. So yeah, your point is taken. That is not a lot of area, especially when you're considering the distance and the height that they were falling off of. Not into a padded area. Like, I think everyone, for the most part, understands we don't want these wrestlers. I think as generally as fans, we're like, yeah, we don't want to see these guys kill other people. Like, let's try to cut back on the whole concussion thing, guys.
I am so done with all the... I am definitely done with the stump bump thing. I don't care if a wrestler never again takes any kind of a fall from any further than the top rope. It's been done so much, for over the last 25 years, from everything that Mick Foley did, ECW, and everything, and then the Hardys and all their wacky ladder matches and various other, falls off of balconies and jumps and things of that nature. It's beyond time to move on that stuff, and it is especially time to move on for that for the guys who've been doing it this whole time, like Matt Hardy.
That's the one where I did kind of get a kick one way or the other. Rebby was right in and of the fact she's like, why the fuck did he basically like, why the fuck did he even think to take this bump? Like, it's just like, yeah, you're putting yourself in a bad spot. Like, and you should know better at this point. And he definitely has had more physical limitations than Jeff. Not to say that Jeff is clean from all that stuff, but I do think that he's had more away from the ring time, which I think has helped his body. And Matt hasn't, and I mean, he kind of had the bow-legged status to start with. So I can't imagine, taking more bumps is gonna do you any good like that. And I always forget that he's like my age. It's just like, why are you, like, I don't want to do anything. I always joke about, for heavy metal people, like, it's been around a long time now, and I used to go into the mosh pits all the time, but everyone talks, the older bands that I still listen to talk about mosh pit retirement. Like, there's just a time where it's just like, nah, my body does not handle that anymore. Like, that was fun when I was younger, but I that's okay. I don't want to wake up sore tomorrow and achy. That's just no bueno. And I know that they've got to kind of do that for their job, but kind of like you said about not going any further than the top rope, like, you can limit this stuff, and I think that we've seen plenty of brawls that haven't had stunt bumps like that. I think the violence is different than the days of ECW, but and that is another point, like, there's a little bit of a desensitization to the whole thing. It's just like, it doesn't really add any drama to the match. It just adds a moment to a match. And at worst, it is an injury.
Yeah, it is. It can be in this case, it's going to be very, it could have been a lot more serious. Thankfully, he's okay, or it's going to end up being okay. Although, there's all the mixed messaging and the and the just shadiness of AEW's response to this. Saying that Matt is going to be first. The messaging during the pay per view that Matt Hardy's was going to be okay, but then finding out from other sources that he had been taken to the hospital. Then another update, but then he ended up having to stay overnight at the hospital. Granted, it was already late at night, but still, they wanted to run through a battery of tests.
You do not stay there for a short time. And even if they're just testing and release you again, not that I took mine as late at night as he did, but it still takes time. Well, actually, I can think of two different injuries that I went to an ER late at night. The concussion was one. A busted open head was another. But if you're allowed to be discharged, like, for my busted open head, I got some stitches and I was out of there in a fairly short time frame. You know, if you're staying overnight, even if it is late, you're A, going through a lot of tests, and B, they're really kind of looking for something. Because it did take me a while to go through what would have been, I guess, an early concussion protocol in a hospital. So, it all seems very weird, like, because it seems like everyone is convinced that it definitely was, but, and I can definitely see, like I said, like, I continued to function, but there are things that I do not remember that I did. And I could see Matt Hardy somehow getting through a match and not really remembering any of it. So it's crazy, but I guess I feel like, haven't there been other wrestlers that have talked about basically having a blacked out match because of an early concussion?
Yeah. That's happened plenty of times.
Yeah, so that part, I guess, just because I've heard of it being done before, I wasn't completely surprised in that regard. But, yeah, the cover-up part, or, I guess I still haven't seen it, but I have a hard time believing that the hospital said that he didn't have anything wrong. And honestly, the announcement on Dynamite this week just made it even stranger. With him calling it a scary moment and saying that he was going to be fine, but he's taking time off.
That's definitely the mixed messaging. Wait a minute, how is he? If he's fine, and because Tony Khan specifically said it was not a concussion. Other people will say that if you take a big fall on your head and you do lose consciousness and black out and have memory loss, then yes, you did have a concussion.
Yeah, that's what I would call it.
Yeah, and that, you know, all the testing that he went through, there's no test that you had a concussion. The testing is making sure that you're not bleeding into your brain or anything of the sort that could, you know, because that's what can kill you after that injury.
Yeah.
You know, how they say, well, actually, you said, obviously, you've been through it, so they don't want you to fall asleep.
Well, and that kind of depends upon the severity, actually. And
right.
And when it took place, luckily mine was not. I still think it's silly that of all the dumb shit that I did in my youth, it happened playing softball and not playing hockey. Although I probably had a concussion when someone broke a stick over the back of my head, but that's another story. Yeah, I was allowed to go to bed. Like, they said it was cool just because it was a lower grade concussion, and that anything, you know, maybe more disruptive than that, they would have suggested that. Just because I always felt like that was something that always happened in the movies. Like, there was always you're not allowed to go to sleep if you have a concussion, and then, you know, some main character has some weird moment during their concussion at the night. but yeah, if Hardy had to stay up all night and not go to bed, it was definitely a concussion. Like, no matter what Tony Khan says. And I guess the other weird part is just with as outspoken as Rebbie Hardy was, it was really even, like, that just helped complete some bizarre trifecta, I guess, of moments. Like, I guess I would not have expected her to be there and be part of this weird charade that's going on.
Right, yeah. It absolutely is. I mean, it was definitely something. It's not as serious as it could have been, but it's serious enough to, you know, that
he needs time off.
He needs time off, and I don't understand why they're so, you know, they're just so obsessed with not calling it a concussion.
We all saw
what happened. You know, you should call it a concussion, and yes, you can take as much time, you know, time as you need. You run through the whole concussion protocol test until he's cleared. Yeah, it could be a week, it could be a month, it could be however long.
Yeah. And
but to be in such denial about it even being a concussion, I don't understand the reasoning behind that, and it has really made them look, you know, shady in a week that you didn't think that they would approach WWE in terms of shadiness.
I kind of forgot about some of the WWE shadiness, honestly, this week, because Shahid and I did not get around. Well, of course, the one thing that popped into my mind was the Gerald Briscoe official let go. Was there something else on your mind?
No, the whole third-party fiasco.
Oh, yeah, and we did not talk about that either, honestly. And that was something that is kind of interesting. Because I guess I kind of had a lot of questions about that in some ways. Just because, haven't they approved a lot of people having these third-party vendors work with them? Like, is Up Up Down Down completely rogue?
No, Up Up Down Down is completely WWE does own Up Up Down Down.
Okay.
That is complete cooperation.
So I guess I don't know all of the targets for this, like, because, and I guess I heard it was mostly about Twitch streaming.
Twitch streaming, doing Cameo, you know, Cameo videos for fans for pay. It basically comes down to using your character name to make money, to make third party money for yourself without cutting in the company.
Yeah.
If you use your real name, it apparently everything's fine.
Oh, okay.
As far as we know right now.
Gotcha. I mean, you can act differently, I guess, if you drop your pseudonym or surname. What am I looking for? Whatever. your ring name. So I forgot about that level of shadiness, just because didn't that hit last Friday?
Yeah, it hit last Friday.
Okay. Yeah. I again, in the world that we live in, last Friday feels like forever ago. But yeah, that was some pretty crazy shadiness. But again, like I guess that's one level of shadiness. I guess it, like, to go back to your point, like, why is it so weird to call it a concussion? Like, I guess, unless there's some law that, you know, they should have never allowed him back out there.
There are no laws here. It's actually one of the things I'm just like, they, you know, Tony Khan passing the book off to the doctor saying, well, the doctor had, and it's something in WWE's, you know, medical protocols as well. Well, the doctor has final say. And I just think, with what authority? He's not a government commissioned doctor. He has no right to truly end a match or shut down a show. It's one of those kind of like wrestling promoter bullshit things that they absolutely have to listen to the doctor.
The doctor has no real
authority.
You, in
this case,
you would hope that they would take their opinion. I guess you are correct that they don't have any legal authority over the situation. But I would hope that it'd be a given if you're like, yeah, he has a concussion, and you just stop that nonsense. Like, I mean, you just really should. That's what it comes down to in this situation. I mean, it kind of leaves them in an awkward spot, but yeah, just shut down the match, man. I guess that's really what it should have come down to. I don't care what
the match should have absolutely been stopped. There is no, yeah, it was absolutely reckless. You know, listening to a obviously concussed and delusional Matt Hardy say he's fine, and continuing the match. That absolutely ridiculous. I mean, hopefully nothing like that ever happens again. Hopefully, for Matt Hardy's sake, that was the come to Jesus moment for him, where he's kind of realized that just stop, just wrestle, man. if you really want to wrestle so badly, and you know, he could have retired to a WWE creative/ office position, but he still wanted to work, and he's always with AEW. Then work, man. Learn a new hold. You don't have to do this shit anymore. You've made your bones in this industry. You don't have to do this anymore. Don't become Tommy Dreamer.
Well, and it's one of those things that's just.
Wrestling is not a cause to die.
Man, I'm rewatching it right now, and the look on Rebby's face is just hysterical. Like, you can even see the I can't believe this fucking nonsense. Even though she has a mask on.
I am sure she had some choice words for Tony Khan earlier that day. She may have made him cry.
But yeah, I guess it is, like, I don't understand why why Matt hasn't learned this lesson already. Like, I guess part of the problem's been, you know, the whole, starting with the broken gimmick, it was a great idea to hide his in-ring problems. You know, because he didn't have matches in the ring, and they were all these weird, either part cinematic or all cinematic style matches, and it helped hide his now physical limitations. And I don't know if he just kind of feels like he needs to do stuff like that to make up for his physical limitations, but that's a bad plan. Like, just, again, like, he's too old for this shit. Like, he's like my age, maybe a year or two younger, but good God, man. Just, these wrestlers, they just give me indigestion. Like, there are times where I hear some of these wrestling podcasts where it's just like, oh, well, if you knew better, why didn't you become a wrestler? I'm like, nah, are you kidding? Like, I hear what you're saying that you need to do to put yourself through to do that. No, that doesn't sound fun. Like, that just sounds completely illogical, sir. I mean, I guess if you become The Rock, I can maybe understand, but most of these guys are not getting to that territory at all. And Matt Hardy's going to go down as a legend, but shoof. At what expense is pretty questionable. Well, I guess that wraps up the Matt Hardy portion of the show. Was there any other?
I think we've lectured this man. We don't actually know personally enough. We can move on.
I guess what else stood out to you from, was there anything else from the pay-per-view that stood out to you?
Well, I guess the other controversy was one Mr. Jim Ross. A little horny on commentary. Just a bit. Just a bit horny.
Oh, yeah, and I kind of forgot that the concussion uproar made me kind of forget about the Jim Ross uproar.
Yes, calling for a wardrobe malfunction involving the Dark Orders and Anna Jay's, which I believe she did during her scuffle with Brandi Rhodes. A strap came unstrapped. And she needed to be rushed out of the situation, but you know, it's one of those times where, you know, you're the lead announcer, you're supposed to be the one bringing class and professionalism to the broadcast. Maybe keep some voices in your head. Don't say it out loud.
Well, it's been kind of weird. Like, not that I feel like he's been that aggressive about it previously, but I feel like he's half filling in for Jerry Lawler sometimes, just even on the regular show. And I'm like, dude, that's kind of creepy. Like, you're way too old for any of these women.
Yeah, he has definitely, you know, made some comments in the past, and also as well on Twitter, he has made the cowboy hat emoticon fairly sleazy. So yeah, it's been an issue for a while. On top of all the other issues of him being, you know, grumpy and crotchety on air, and, you know, being absolutely outright dismissive of the modern wrestling style, and pointing out like the logical holes in people's games in a way that's, I know Jeremy has said he likes it, but Jeremy's also a crashy old man too. it's absolutely unprofessional. I mean, there to do some of the things he says, some of the things he said, and you know, being dismissive of so many wrestlers, and yeah, I mean, this past Saturday's show was not good at all. It was the worst thing. It was the worst, you know, long form special event that AEW has done, and commentary was definitely part of that. I mean, Shivani was game. It was his usual self. Not a big fan of Excalibur to begin with, and then JR just, you know, grumpy, horny, and just during the key matches, the key moments on the show that the old JR would be up for. No, he didn't get up for any of it. It was definitely, it's been a growing issue with him. Though, as of last night's show, he didn't do any of that. He was borderline good at his job again. So I wonder if Mr. Khan had to pull JR aside and have a little conversation with him after Saturday night.
Which has been
due.
Yeah, I mean, it's one of those, I guess those moments have been noticeable to me, but I also don't think it's been a full-time thing for him either. Some of the shows are worse than others. There have been almost complete shows where he's been bad, but for the most part, I do feel like it passes in and out of that, so I guess I don't mind too much, but it is one of those things that I'm like, but when do you get off the Jim Ross train? Like, it's one of those things that I guess there's this kind of weird thing, like, at first I was upset that Jim Ross was let go by the WWE. But at some point, I'm like, okay, I'm kind of over this. Like, I feel like other people can do the same job, or can do the job just as well. And, you know, it just kind of became, okay, whatever about JR. But, you know, AEW likes to employ all these older guys that have been around forever and have some type of connection to either Southern wrestling or you know, Dusty Rhodes himself. And yeah, like, when do you tell JR, yeah, we don't need you anymore? Like, because there's I'm sure that there is someone out there that could replace him. I'm completely positive. The WWE has, you know, you could say that they had four at least decent play-by-play guys. Like, I know you don't like Mauro that much, and I know he's gone now, but, you know, I guess I'm cool, fine with Michael Cole these days. Tom Phillips is passable well, probably more than passable. I think I like him best. And Vic Joseph is good. So, like, I'm sure there's another guy out there that could do the job that JR does.
Yeah, I would say that WWE is announcing has absolutely, you know, balanced itself back out. You know, I like Vic Joseph and Wade Barrett, and I guess Beth Phoenix. she could probably go, though. And Vic and Wade Barrett might actually be better, just the two of them. Cole and Graves are fine, and the Phillips, Samoa Joe, Byron Saxton team has been a revelation, actually, for me. Over on AEW, you know what? And they've got quite a number of people. They've used Veda Scott as a commentator. I actually think she's pretty damn good. Taz would really be better off just in the booth full time than doing any kind of, you know, semi-managing of Brian Cage and Ricky Starks. I think Taz would be good in the booth. And then if you need that third, Taz in the booth with Tony Schiavone, and you got either Excalibur or Veda Scott in the third position.
Oh.
That would work fine, but
yeah.
Obviously JR has a contract, and a contract that's worth a lot of money. Like, JR might be the second highest paid on-screen performer in that company, or the second or third behind, you know, Jericho or Moxley, maybe, to be an announcer. Which is probably the biggest thing that has irked me about his performance level and his motivation to do a good job in this company, because they are paying him so much damn money, supposedly.
Yeah, well, I would hope that he would ask for a decent price tag just to start with. I'm not saying, I think I made it pretty clear that I would not be worrying about him to have to pay him that price tag. So, I guess I don't think much of the quality, but I guess it wouldn't surprise me that he's one of the highest paid people there. And is he helping them do anything else other than the announcing?
I don't think he is. I think he just shows up with his one day a week and maybe two when there's a pay-per-view. If they're back to doing live every week.
Dang, man. That's a hell of a gig.
That is a hell of a gig, so I don't know what you have to be in a bad mood for.
I don't know either.
Other than, you know, if he's still having issues with depression due to the death of his wife, then, you know, he needs to ask for help and get it, and the people who care for him need to get him help. But, you know, he just cannot keep going down the road he was going on. So hopefully this week was a new beginning for JR and AEW.
Yeah, we will. I'm sure we'll keep an eye on that. I think talking about announcing is always a fun hobby horse to go to. I guess one big moment here to me would have been, and something that I'm not surprised about, I guess, is Orange Cassidy won the Mimosa Mayhem match. Chris Jericho kind of filling a role that he probably should be filling at this point in his career, which is a high-level enhancement talent.
Yeah, I don't know if you're necessarily paid Chris Jericho to do that, but yes, to work with newer guys and to, you know, and to get them ready for, you know, stardom. Yeah, that's absolutely what he should be doing. You know, you can't have him wrestling guys he's wrestled before in WWE, you know, over and over again, like they were in the early stages of AEW. So, no, it was really good. It was a good feud. I mean, but of course, with it, I mean, Jericho did his job. He did too. He, you know, dropped two losses to Orange Cassidy. Orange Cassidy is arguably the most over guy in the company right now. But it's now all in the follow-up. That's going to be the interesting part. You've got, where does he go from here? The world title is on, is around the waist of a baby face, of a fellow baby face, who's arguably the biggest, or maybe in comparison to Jericho, the second biggest star in the company, Mox. And the TV title is around Brody Lee, but that seems to be being earmarked for a feud with Cody once he returns. So, there doesn't seem to be anywhere bigger and better for Orange Cassidy to go after beating Chris Jericho. And I asked this question on Twitter last night, but is Orange Cassidy in danger of becoming too normal? He just wrestled a normal match last night against Angelico. He didn't even put his hands down his pockets once. That's the gimmick.
Yeah, it was kind of weird just seeing him. Like, it was almost a back step immediately.
Yeah, I don't know if that's sort of like to go that far yet, but yeah, I mean.
It's a little harsh.
Orange Cassidy stuff. He's just a skinny guy who's a pretty good worker. If he's not doing, you know, the Orange Cassidy routine.
Yeah, because there was not any kicking of the shins either, if I'm not mistaken.
He didn't do any of his routine. So yeah, I definitely have my concerns about their ability to keep things moving forward with one Orange Cassidy.
They've already had, because has he wrestled Jake Hager already?
I don't think they've done the set.
They
have not done a singles match with them. That's not a step up from Jericho.
That's
a step back down.
Well,
that's kind of what I'm talking about. Yeah.
I know what you mean, but AEW still kind of has the problem that they don't have the roster built up the way they need to yet at this moment to have someone for him to move on to, I guess. And I was just trying to think of someone physically larger you always get to sell Hager as a badass because MMA experience and wrestling experience.
Well, you know who the next heel you can move on, you can move Orange Cassidy on to, which would be something which would at least be comparable to Jericho in a lateral move? MJF.
Oh. Well, and I guess that was something that did hit me beforehand, considering that MJF just lost to Jon Moxley. And Cassidy beat Jericho. It would seem to be a good way to A, have a feud, B, determine who takes on Jon Moxley next.
Yeah, because Moxley's next title defense is going to be on TV in October against Lance Archer. So they're not going to take Lance Archer to the next, unless there's a screwy finish involved. They're not taking the Archer feud to the next pay-per-view.
Yes, agreed. So yeah, there is MJF slash, and I mean, you'd always have to get by his guard dog Wardlow.
Yeah, that's another. You know what? I like what they're doing there. I like that they're saying that Wardlow does not actually work for AEW. He has a personal services contract with MJF. So MJF is who pays him, and if Wardlow crosses him, then he's fired. I like that they're going that route with it.
It certainly helps build up some frustration level for him. And I guess I was thinking it's a little too early to pull the trigger on their split. So I'm glad that an angle like this is, you know, again being played, just because it helps string this out a little bit longer, and it should be strung out a little bit longer, honestly.
Yeah, it definitely should. I mean, that is sometimes the issue with these type of angles, where another wrestler is, you know, aligned with another wrestler in that kind of capacity, and it's and they don't bring it up that hey, he doesn't work for the company. He works for him. So that's why he can't just, you know, powerbomb him through a table right then and there.
Oh, right. Oh, so yeah, that would be probably the best one of the other better moves for Orange Cassidy after Jericho. Just because, you know, again, like, those two are about, you know, they're the two main heels in AEW right now.
Yeah.
So there just isn't a whole lot to go with. And, yeah, like you said, Brody Lee already seems like he's going to be otherwise tied up. I guess I could see that as a feud, because then you can have best friends kind of help fend off the Dark Order, but they also seem like they're going to be tied up with Santana and Ortiz for a little bit longer.
Yeah.
So that part of the equation would not work out.
Right.
just because he is on my TV right now, I guess this show would be remiss if we did not mention that Miro, a.k.a. Rusev, is now All Elite. Level of shock and surprise from your side?
In this role, I can say I did not see it coming. I wasn't sure who was going to be Kip Sabian's best man. But I also can say that I didn't really put much thought in it, or didn't really care that much about about such a thing. But it's that they're calling him the best man, Miro. It's an interesting, weird spot to put somebody in if you're thinking that they can be a top guy. But AEW has had the issue of bringing these former WWE guys in and shooting them right to the top in a very TNA fashion. So if Miro can kick around the mid-card for a little while, you know, and kind of work his way into a top spot, that maybe long-term that would be better overall.
It'll be pretty interesting. There is definitely more, you get to tell a general fan reaction a little bit better with the AEW shows, since they have actual fans there. It's still, I'm not sure if it's any louder or not than the Thunderdome, honestly, just because everyone's still spaced out a bit.
Right.
But hey, they're real humans there, so, I'll go borderline with them. Yeah, it'll be kind of interesting to see what happens with him, like, because, I mean, it's just kind of made me laugh that Sean Spears has not gotten anywhere since moving over to AEW. He is not any better off than he was in the WWE. And it'll be interesting to see if Miro can get himself back to that spot. He did kind of, I guess it'll be interesting to see what the best man entails in the future here. But I hope it isn't basically just a rehashing of what we've already had out of Rusev.
Yeah, I'm not sure what they have planned, and what's in his head, or how motivated he is. He definitely seemed like someone, once again, if anyone WWE let go since COVID, or even in the, maybe in the last year or two, he has the right to have the be the most bitter and jaded about it. He, at so many points, he could have been a bigger deal, especially when Rusev Day took off. We've been over that ad nauseum.
Yes.
But it also seemed like it did affect him over time and his motivation level in his own head. So hopefully he can get some of that back, because he is he's a talented performer and a very charismatic guy. So it'll be interesting to see where this goes, because it's not exactly like Kip Sabian is this incredibly over character. This whole thing with him and Penelope Ford getting married, you know, kind of came out of nowhere. I know the old feeling is weddings and wrestling, draw ratings. But I don't think that they've taken the time with Kip Sabian and Penelope Ford to really make people really care about this. So we'll see where that all goes, or how long they'll wait to do the wedding. I know they want to make that episode in the middle of October that they're calling their anniversary show a big episode. Maybe it'll be there. So, and if that's the case, then they'll at least have maybe 4 weeks of, you know, funny skits and things of that nature. Do a bachelor party shenanigans. WWE style sports entertainment skits, but we'll see. Let's see how good they are. Yeah, I don't know. I'm not sure, but I'll watch anyway. I'm gonna watch anyway.
Yeah, I'm at least gonna watch their on-air product. So we shall indeed see what his life beholds. I did kind of chuckle that Tay Conti ended up in the exact same spot that she was with in NXT 2, which was fodder for Nyla Rose this week, which did not terribly surprise me.
Yeah, that didn't really surprise me either. I mean, obviously Nyla Rose wasn't going to lose that match. I mean, Tay Conti was someone that they didn't do much with in WWE and NXT. A lot of start and stop stuff with her. So she'd be she's not 100% ready for a major spot anyway. She could definitely be a project. I know they've done the teases with her and Anna Jay because they were partners in the tag team tournament. So, and you know, teases that, you know, she's being courted by the Dark Order. So, once again, everyone's got to start somewhere.
Yeah, she definitely, like, I mean, we've made fun of their women's division as a whole. And at least from what I've seen from Conti, she seems at least, passable in the ring.
Yeah, no, I mean, she's a legit athlete, a legitimate black belt, so, you know, she has the tools to be very good at this. But it's, you know, WWE's, NXT's women's roster was so bloated, she never really got much of a chance.
She's one that, and I guess you said it, she's a little bit more of a project in general, but I think it's a good project and one that that AEW desperately needs.
Yes.
Because like you said, like the women's division is just still so stacked down there. It's like, yeah, sorry, bye. Like, you almost have to lose some of the good ladies out of NXT at this point. That was an interesting one. I guess it's always worth talking about the champion, I guess, of any promotion. Since we already, at least in passing, talked about his opponent, MJF. Jon Moxley, still AEW champion. What did you think about his match with MJF?
The match was fine, but it came at the end of a long show that had not certainly gone to AEW's liking, or to my liking, damn sure. So it fell flat. The finish with having Moxley still do the paradigm after all the legal wrangling with the banning the paradigm shift. You know, the finish is just Moxley does it behind the referee's back, and that's okay. Nobody does anything about it.
Nope.
That fell flat with me. But I mean, Moxley is he's still our top guy. So they decided it wasn't MJF's time yet, and to keep running with Moxley. Now, the one thing I didn't like is because they did do the number one contenders, battle royal. They really did telegraph it by having Archer win, because they weren't going to do heel versus heel in that way. So
right.
It had already been telegraphed earlier in the night. But I guess they still could have played fast and loose with the timeline or when he's owed the shot or whatever. But still, it still felt like Moxley's winning this thing.
As much as I like MJF, it still does feel like he needs. I guess his feuds are all talking, and it's kind of weird these days to have almost an all-talking feud. Just because matches can... Yeah, there are just a lot of matches. And I still feel like MJF has something to prove in the ring. And
he still has not had that great match, because... Saturday was not a great match, and nor was his other real highlight, singles match on pay-per-view against Cody. Although I never actually saw that match. I just every row of it pretty much called it average. So yeah, you're right. MJF has not had that great match.
Yeah, so it'll be kind of interesting to see. See what happens with that situation. And Moxley probably has another couple of challengers coming his way already. And that's fine. I don't really expect Lance Archer to win the title. I just expect him to be another tough out. And someone else will take that title from him at a later date. Anything else AEW wise that I'm not thinking about that's worth talking about before heading on out of here?
I guess we should talk about this situation with the Elite.
The
apparent breakup of the Elite, although not as dynamic of a breakup as I was expecting. Certainly, one of the thing I was most disappointed with, that they were going with the more subtle, long-term, breakup instead of not having either Kenny or Hangman, really violently turn against each other, a la Bayley and Sasha Banks. Instead, they're going with a more subtle approach to it, with having Omega walk out on Hangman after the match, after he'd been injured during the match, and then demand that the Young Bucks leave with him, but then they were very hesitant to. Kenny does appear to be the one heading towards a heel turn. I liked his promo on Dynamite. I thought that it was very one of his better promos, and talking about that the tag team is done, and that he essentially is focusing back on singles competition. Hated the deal with the Young Bucks and Alex Marvez. That was just stupid. You should almost never touch announcers, physically attack announcers, but to do it that goofy looking, and Marvez, Marvez is basically an elderly non-athlete, so what was he going to do besides basically stumble off camera? The whole thing looked like crap.
it was not the best look, and I mean, you've talked ad nauseum about them being executive vice presidents, too. So it's just like one of those, oh, management, find them. They're management guys. Who find him exactly?
I guess they've made mention of the name Tony Khan, even though they've never actually shown Tony Khan on screen. So,
yep. Yeah.
All of viewers are supposed to know who don't follow along with everything online are supposed to know who Tony Khan is, I guess.
Yeah, I mean, they do have some, at least name recognition there, even if there isn't facial recognition. Right. But, yeah, agreed. Like, it's one of those things that just saying we don't want to talk and slamming the door in his face would have served them just as well.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely.
And then everyone else, you know, you don't look... Like, as much as you, you know, you still look upset, the announcer doesn't need to look like a goofball, and you guys don't need to look like complete assholes for super kicking someone that is an announcer that doesn't even know it's coming.
Yeah, no, no. Yeah, that was, yeah, that whole thing was dumb. Also, teetering on dumb is unfortunately, the Hangman Page part of this equation. You know, there is a line. I don't even know if it's that thin between someone being a cool guy who likes to drink and an alcoholic, and they are crossing that line with poor Hangman Page. And I don't know if, you know, for someone who could be a top level babyface for them, presenting him as a drunk with anxiety issues is the best play here.
Yeah, it's a weird spot for him to be in now. Like, it's kind of gotten to the point where, and like you said, like, it's funny for a while, but then you're just like, no, you've been doing this for, like, months and months now. Like, it's one thing to be party guy. It's another thing to be serious, top-level babyface. Like, because it was... I'm trying to think if Steve... Because I don't think Steve Austin drank beer every time he came to the ring, did he?
Not until after the match. I don't think they ever really portrayed Steve Austin as ever actually being drunk on air.
Well, that is a valid point. I believe you're correct.
And they've crossed that line with Hangman, absolutely. He's drinking all the time. He's drinking before his matches. Yeah, he was drunk during the interview with JR. And so, yeah, no, I guess this is the problem. And once again, if they had made a definitive heel turn for somebody on Saturday, this wouldn't still be a problem, but all four of them are acting like complete assholes to each other and are kind of unlikable at this point.
Yeah, that is a true statement. And yeah, doesn't make for a terribly compelling storyline for anyone.
It was something that had helped me for a while. So, yeah, I think they needed to have a definitive conclusion to it, at least by Saturday. And they decided to keep pushing it further. So, yeah, we'll see where it goes. But I'm not all that excited to see where it goes as I was.
Okie dokie. Well, yeah, I guess wrapping up with the creators, essentially, of AEW is a good place to finish up. I am still on beer from my sister-in-law who drove in from Colorado. This one's from Wiley Roots Brewing Company Slush. Sour ale with raspberry and lemon. And it tastes like a raspberry lemonade. And I would say that this would be trouble, but it's only 4.6% alcohol, so it is not terribly intoxicating. But it is quite tasty. So if you happen to find yourself in the state of Colorado, I would suggest this one if you are down with the sour ales. So that is my Beltane beer of the evening. He is at Stunt Cali. I am at DeFrango 11. The brand is at Stunt Granny. Rate and review us on iTunes, SoundCloud, Google Podcasts, Spotify, wherever else you may happen to find us. And have a good night.